I tried to pee off the side of the bike at one stage.
You should have just done it. Just pissed yourself. That's dedication. You need that.
It just, the first bit just immediately went onto the shoe. And I just thought, no, no, that's enough of that.
We didn't have a shoe sponsor at that time. Yeah. So.
Hello and welcome to the Mountain Running Pod. I'm Seb Batchelor and I'm joined by the man himself, Rob Sinclair. After a slightly longer than planned mid-season break, it feels pretty good to be back on the pod, Robbo. How are you doing, man?
Definitely. I'm bloody buzzing that we've actually managed to get a podcast together. It's been a long time, mate. Does it? Things are going all right here, to be honest with you. How are you, pal?
Not too bad. Actually, pretty good, I'd say. I finished my exams last week, so I'm on a month holiday. And though, and provided I actually pass, those are the final written university exams I'll ever do. So happy days.
Yes, such a relief for you after all this time. You know, you put in so many hours. It's unreal sitting at that desk, man. Like, your ass must get so sore.
I was thinking actually today that I got a little bit of like a tan, and I was wondering actually if it was because of the light coming off the computer monitor for like so many hours staring at the freaking screen.
It probably is. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that now that you're living so far north and you're inside so many hours as well, obviously you're outside a lot too, but you're probably low on the old vitamin D. Like,
I'm hammering the vitamin C supplements, to be honest with you.
Are you getting those vitamin C's? Maybe some iron might help as well, you know.
Yeah, no.
Get the full package.
Are you on any subs?
Well, just now, because of the status with the injury, I'm taking, it's some turmeric for inflammation, obviously. And I think I have a vitamin D tablet, which I start normally like the end of November into December. And I just kind of smash it up until maybe like March or something. But I know some folk take them all the time who stay around here, don't they?
I think it's a good idea. But you mentioned injury there. And something that we're going to come on to later, isn't it?
Aye, definitely.
We're going to go into more of a discussion on injury and rehabbing. But I guess some good news to talk about would be that, do you think we're going to see some racing this year? I mean, things look to be easing out. So what do you reckon?
I think so. It's funny because you go through 1 week, don't you? And you speak to several folk and they're all saying, yes, we're getting back on this, getting back on that. And then you get your hopes up and then someone says something or you get an email from someone and that's it. It's done, is it? I mean, what do you reckon? Do you think we're going to... I mean, that was another email today. Trail Marathon Wales cancelled, which is...
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Did you see it?
Maybe I haven't checked my emails. Yeah.
Well, that's like a golden trail race, you know, for the UK Salmon and stuff. And that's a big loss for the... It's in a good race, you know.
Well, so, I put out on social media, on Instagram, a couple of weeks ago to see like the kind of consensus on whether people thought races were going to go ahead, and asked the question if people had entered any races yet, because at the time I wasn't optimistic at all on going ahead. And to be honest, it was about 55, 45, something like that. 55% of people that responded to it had entered races yet, 45% hadn't. I don't know, really. I mean, there's also, like, if they are going to go ahead, like, what are they going to look like? You know, they're going to be invite-only, smaller fields. Have you heard anything about that?
Not really. I mean, there is, when you check out YouTube and you can get some highlights of things going on, like there was Trans Gran Canaria 125K, and there's races going ahead, but again, until, like you say, the COVID passport, I mean... I'm going to be abroad before you anyway, mate, because I'm getting a jab in 2 weeks.
What? Why? Are you critically important?
I've done it for some reason. We got a letter through and it said from the doctor, because I used to have asthma when I was like really young and it left me when I was about 10. But apparently, because that was the case and I'm getting my first jab, so I was like, yes, sooner the better, because then...
then you'll actually be able to do things.
Yeah, I'll be sneaking away abroad, mate. You'll have to come in a suitcase.
Because I was going to say that, was I thought you'd be in the same category as me, i.e. the last to potentially get offered this.
Well, somehow I've been offered it first, and I didn't have to pay anyone any money or buy anyone.
You know why it is? Because they're still not quite sure what the side effects are going to be. So basically, guinea pig bait. they don't mind what happens to people that get it early on.
They don't mind what happens to idiotic feral humans like me. They just flipping fill me with anything, and I'll take it. I'm keen.
Oh God, but yeah, I mean we said, didn't we, that this been? I think it was October we recorded the last podcast, and I know we were going to have
the podcast got COVID, everyone.
Don't even go there, mate. Don't even go there. We were going to have a little bit of a break anyway. It turned into quite a lengthy one, because
I know
we're bloody busy, aren't we?
Yeah, well, everyone's been asking me like, oh, what's happened to it? It's totally died. And every time I'm saying it, I'm like, oh well, my work just gets mental at times, and I don't think I'll ever calm down really until I bloody end up leaving. But and you as well with your studies, and then you came into your exam period and you had all your practicals going down south. It was just a car crash of time and lack of time.
And I think it brings up a good topic, something that I think you were quite keen on on discussing, was kind of managing training, racing alongside work, because this has all come about because we just got so much on our plates, which is why it's taken so long. And a lot of people out there work very hard but still compete to a high level. Like, how do you, you know, how do you do it? How do you manage to get your training in, because you work quite a physical job, you're on your feet a lot, and how do you still get the quality and still churn out the results?
I think the problem, it's never that it's easy. It's always so bloody hard to fit things in, and sometimes you don't want to train and do certain things, but you always think long game, think, you know, even if you're going to race and you know that you're not going to race well, you still want to prove to yourself that you can do everything. But on the flip side of that, you know, the caveat is you end up smashing yourself up, you know, that repetitive stress, repetitive strain, too much work, too much training, too much thinking. You get into the invincible stage, don't you? And then as I found out over the winter anyway, some things go pop. And but yeah, it's a really hard thing to balance, and it's so difficult to know when you're going to peak with things. But that has been something that COVID has showed me a lot, that I can actually work through that. Like, you can figure out time frames a lot better, you know, planning that recovery. Ironically, I'm saying that now, but
that is pretty funny.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? But yeah, what about you, mate? I mean, you came from such like a dedicated full-time cycling career, if we want to call it that, you know, if you feel okay with me calling it a career.
Yeah, I'll take that. I think the biggest thing for me that gives is recovery, and I reckon most people would probably say the same.
Yeah.
Because especially the last, I'd say since Christmas, and even a little bit before Christmas, but certainly since Christmas, I've not done an awful lot of sleeping, to be honest, man. Like,
your hair, I think, since I last seen you, your hairline has receded at least.
You should see how grey I am.
At least
as well.
An inch. Are you getting the grey, man? Yes, grey fox. It's a sexy look, mate. You've got to rock that.
It's the George Clooney, yeah. I just keep going with it. But no, 100% it's the recovery. Like, you don't sleep enough, you don't have enough downtime, and ultimately, if you're not careful with your training, which you're guilty of in the past,
100%.
You realise that you're getting progressively more and more fatigued, and then you go off a cliff, and that's either injury or, you know, that becomes like a form of overtraining, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And, I think that going back to your point on coming from the biking and doing that full time for so long,
mm-hmm.
I'd say the difference between being full time and juggling it alongside a job or studies, like proper studies, not just like, you know, 1 hour a week, it's night and day. Like, I'd say, like, anyone that is full time, like proper full time, has got no excuse for ever being beaten by someone like me and you, ever.
Yeah, mate.
Like, totally, if we're in a sky race or we're in a mountain race and a full-on pro, we beat a full-on pro, which, I'm going to be honest, has happened, I mean, they should go and just walk off right there, man. Because it's completely different. It's a completely unlevel playing field.
Yeah,
it's why, like, so in different sports...
it's like recovery doping. It's rest doping.
Exactly. But in different sports, right? So if you look at, like, football...
Check the sour grape drops.
Football... Bad. Rugby or whatever, they've got different like leagues, haven't they? They've got like, you know, professionals, etc. down, then it filters down. In like our sport, the full-on pros race with the very good amateurs or semi-professionals.
Yeah.
So there's not level playing field at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose part of it though, sometimes you've just got to man the fuck up and just you've got to just smash to deal with the cards you've got at the time, don't you? You know, unless these are people at the same time who are taking that step into the you know, let's be honest, it's a lower paid, it's not a massive salary thing to run full time and things. And as we know, like, sponsorships and things are rare to come by, and they are making a sacrifice as well. But I totally agree with you that it's not level in that way, you know. Like, right now, I could probably rock up to a Highland League, run an event and get absolutely pummeled, mate. Like, seriously. But yeah, it's steady progress, let's put it that way.
On that, given 99.99% of people probably that actually compete, have a job or what have you, like, what advice are you going to give to them when you're juggling the two? Because you do work a very intense job.
Yeah, you have to. You just have to have that next level passion that, you know, transcends all above all else, doesn't it? You have to sacrifice certain things, like not go out on the booze as much and do all that sort of stuff. And it becomes, once you see results, you realize it's all worth it in the end. You know what I mean? You don't get anything for nothing. And I suppose my main bit of advice would be just, you get out what you put in, don't you? You, like, that's always been something that was drummed into me in family life. You know, you've just got to work for what you want to achieve, eh?
100%, Rob. 100%. You know. Let's just get into it.
Okay.
Where's your body at?
Well, and as you know very well, end of November, I kind of just realized something wasn't right with my the distal part of my quad. And but I'll speak to you about this later, but it basically, what was thought was a small tear and things down in that area, actually ended up, it has been 100% confirmed, it is actually a small tear, but it's right down at the sort of periosteal level. So where, given the nature of
the pericardium, Rob.
Yeah, pericardium. for the record, that was a very early Monday morning text I received.
Yeah,
it's not,
I get this
it's
text
the quad,
off Rob,
it's not the heart, it's
that
the
says,
quad.
I've got a tear in my pericardium.
Yeah, and you were, your reply was like a broken heart emoji on WhatsApp, and you were like, oh mate, that's a shame. You've got a broken heart. Who broke your heart?
Oh god.
Good banter.
So where's the rehab and where are you at with it?
It's going well, it's going really well. The problem with the good thing was it wasn't a stress fracture or anything. All of my structures in my knee are completely fine, you know, PCL, ACL, ligaments, everything's good. Patellar tendon's good. The issue with this is, because it's not a stress fracture, the reactions are in several areas around the small tear, which is shown that it's almost fully healed, but you get a lot of fluid and inflammation buildup. And it's working that balance between it, allowing it to recover whilst also stressing it. So the rehab situ right now is running, like, you know, 3 to 4 times a week, which I'm not complaining about at all. You know, that's still decent enough, because in between doing circuits and core stuff and all that, it's good. But in terms of loading the actual quad and the knee, it's more into like starting the isometric stuff as of like 2 weeks ago. So it's just, you know, doing wall squat holds and all that sort of thing. But there's been a real focus come of all this through just the importance of the pathways from your pelvis to your foot, and the way that you run is a phenomenal thing. You know, that if something goes wrong somewhere in that kinetic chain, you're gone, are you? You know, like, it over, and you repeat the stress on that with bad technique and things, your biomechanics are goosed, you know.
Mm. So what's your time frame on it at the moment then? What are you looking like?
I reckon keep building steady for March and I'll probably be able to get back to decent capacity training, hopefully the start of April, but it could be before then. But it's a difficult thing to judge because you've got to like feel where you're at with your pain. You know what it's like with the Achilles, eh? You've got to not push over the edge too much. Like, you know, like running wise, I've done a couple of 75 minute things and stuff, which is nothing compared to like 6 hour runs and that. But when you can do things like that, pretty much pain free, you know, you're in a better place. So there's definitely progress happening, pal.
That's good. You know, that's good.
So it's good. You know, it's been a long winter though, not being able to do any crazy things, especially with COVID, but you've just got to get creative with your training and show to the absolute next level discipline, you know, annoy the fuck out of the missus at home, taking over the living room as like a small gym every other night, you know.
Yeah, perhaps in the long run, maybe even for both of us, you know, having the time off running is going to benefit things.
Oh, 100% agree. I couldn't agree more. But by next winter, hopefully, I won't be in quite as demanding work position either.
Are you going to dangle that one out?
Dangle the carrot. Well, I think by summer, for anyone that doesn't know, I'll be finishing a diploma in personal training. So I'm going to gradually make the transition, probably start in summer. But like we're saying before, you have to take the leap and stuff. So that is planned for around sort of June time, potentially. But you never, like with what's going on with COVID, you never know what's going on. So things will just organically progress to that, but you've got to set yourself goals. And yeah, so by next winter I'll probably be hanging around some mountain place throwing tires and slam balls at people going up a hill rep or something.
Nice, you know? that's good news, Rob. Yeah. I tell you, we've been talking about injuries, and on the topic of injuries, I can't think of a better person to enlighten this conversation than the guy I travelled around the world racing with. He's represented GB on the bike and crucially has had more than his fair share of injuries. He likes to say he's rehabbing for the rest of his life. Welcome to the pod. It's my brother, Hamish Batchelor.
Evening.
Before you joined, we were on the topic of injuries, which is why we've got you on the pod, because your body's wrecked constantly.
It's done.
What's the current injury status?
To be fair, not as bad as it has been. I've got my ACL's done, and I think that's forever. My shoulder's still a bit dodgy on and off. It's a bit cold at the moment, so you can feel that.
Nightmare. So on injuries, Rob, worst injury?
Worst? Probably, I don't know, probably this one that I'm currently experiencing, mate. I'm not even kidding. Because it's soft tissue related and stuff, it's just an absolute bastard to heal, you know. What about you, Seb? What's the worst injury for you?
I don't know. I might let Hamish choose that, because it's going to come from the bike. So I'll let Hamish choose what he thinks is the worst one.
It's probably a top two or three, isn't there? In there, and how do you choose between like a broken neck, a fractured kneecap, and I can't remember what the third one was. Oh, the Achilles. To be honest, that one's pretty bad. I think if I was to pick one, it's got to be the broken neck, hasn't it? We were racing the World Cup mountain bike in Hafjell in Norway back in 2013. So we're going back a bit.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and there was a BMX section where there's a few sort of Yeah, I know. This was as mountain bike cross country started to get more and more hardcore. And basically, it was a BMX section. At the end of it, there were six whoops. And Seb, he'd seen one of the downhill guys come down it on his like trail bike, do it in two, so do a triple, and was like, yeah, that looks all right. It should be able to do that on my XC hardtail. Rolled up, did it a couple of times, and I was like, no.
It was pretty sketchy when I was doing it. I felt on the edge.
I was like, that's not for me, but okay. And it was in training as well. Just came flying down, double, came up short on the last one, straight over the bars, face into the ground, just like on the ground, like, you know, like that concussed, like, I assume this is the point where you got no memory, just like rolling around on the ground. And I'm like, at the top of the track, just scoot off the edge, nail it down the side, like, what is going on? My parents are right there as well. Dad's having an absolute meltdown, like, oh, that's brain damage. I'm like, no, it's only a concussion, which you can't say that now.
Yeah, but it's only recently you told me that when I binned it, I was actually like wriggling around the floor. I thought I was just knocked out on the floor.
No, if you've ever seen a concussion, it's pretty rare that, you know, in the movies where you just slog someone and they're just down. Just doesn't happen that way, and you just like roll it around like those sort of horrible noises we like.
It's the reason why is because the memory stops on the run in, and then it restarts again getting into the ambulance.
I mean, that's
like at the bottom of the mountain.
It's probably like an hour later.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, you said that after that, they ended up scraping off the top of the jumps, didn't they?
I mean, it's funny now. Funny thing is, Seb's rolling around on the floor while like the guys on the quad bikes have come up and like, oh, you okay? And I want to say like 30 seconds later, some Frenchie comes down, does exactly the same thing and breaks his arm. And they were just like, right, everyone off the track. And they got like out the shovels and like scraping off the top of the...
it was absolutely nuts. I ended up getting taken to Lillehammer Hospital.
They must have seen a lot of ski injuries.
Yeah, lots of knees. And everything was kind of normal, everything, you know, in the hospital. And then suddenly they walked up and they like just like held me and everything went there. They stopped me from moving. And then, because mum was there, and mum was like, oh, shit. Because they'd been quite blasé and then suddenly they weren't allowing me to move. So basically, to cut a long story short, I broke the occipital condyle, one of the occipital condyles. It's actually technically the base of your skull. It's what articulates C1 with your skull and supports the weight of your head. So apparently it's a ridiculously difficult thing to break. And if you do break it, people that do break it usually end up with horrific spinal damage. So kind of dodged a bullet, I guess.
It must have been so close to hitting nerves and things on the spine there. That's crazy.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
It's just a scary.
But no, that was, I think I probably have to agree. That one probably does top the kneecap.
It's just because from my memory, I just remember you walking around for 3 months with a neck brace on. Just, you know, where you're not allowed to move your head like that. Just stuck like that. You used to just go up into his bedroom just to like take it off and just lie. Just be like, oh. And then I just remember when you went to a specialist in Leeds and they were like, oh yeah, you're fine to move your neck now. And you just moved it. And the range of motion was about like 2 degrees away. And then when you finally cracked it, it went all the way down and you were like, oh shit, something happened. So, no, I'm good.
But those are the kind of injuries you get. We always say, don't we, that the bike was all like bone injuries and then running's all soft tissue.
Yeah. Whenever I go to a physio, which is pretty regular, I always say that the bike was like catastrophic type injuries, and running is it's just all repetition.
Yeah, overuse,
like,
is it?
All that kind of stuff, isn't it? Absolutely. I don't know what's worse though. Is I don't know. I find the running injuries pretty
bad.
They
just go on for ages. I'd love to get some absolute dirt on the wee man Betsebi from school times.
He was a wee man back then as well. It's funny.
I'd love it. I'd love to get some dirt.
It's funny because we always like, yeah, I'll catch up in height, and basically we've stayed the same height difference forever.
Are you the big
just
bro,
never caught
yeah?
up. Yeah, when by big, I mean like just under 6 foot. So annoying, didn't quite break
shit.
It. But...
That must make for some funny family photos.
I'm an absolute giant. That's the subject.
Yes. But I instantly he'll be like, "Yeah, my engine though. Watch out, this is my engine." You know,
it's just the power to weight. That's what I always get. Yeah. Just got the power. We've got the same power, but you're just 10 kilos heavier.
quality.
It was good when we were training together, though, because Hamish and I, we used to go everywhere, and we used to go and train together like every day. And I definitely think that made us, I don't know if you agree, Hamish, that made us better than if we'd been on our own.
Yeah, I've reflected on this a bit, yeah. Actually. In some ways, yes, because you've always got someone to drag you out the door. I was probably getting dragged out more than the other way around. You've always got someone to push you. But then on the flip side, training becomes quite similar, doesn't it? And you aren't always in sync with where you are in your form. So potentially that could hold you back. I'd say overall it would have been a positive for sure. And some of the sessions we used to do, particularly on the bike, were quite geared around you wouldn't be able to do it on your own sort of thing. But it could go both ways. A bit of variety probably would have helped occasionally, but I don't know.
Do you think, Rob, that's like, you know, going down to a squad and getting squad training a couple of times a week?
Oh, yeah. Totally. I think I was just going to say that once Hamish had finished saying about what we were talking about, the discipline factor, that's a huge thing. Just having a group of like-minded folks that you can go every week or, you know, at the weekend and just go and smash a session out on the trails or do some intervals on the track or even road reps or something. But you having that person to catch on to or someone else to push, like you boys must have loved that together. Times probably hated each other, but also times just brought the best out in each other in that way, you know, and that takes big discipline as well, you know.
Yeah, we were quite good actually. People used to say, because we were brothers, were we more competitive? But it was almost the other way around actually. We'd probably team up on other people. Yeah. So I'd say it was more an advantage. But you get that more on the bike than you do with running. You've not got the legs in running, you've just not got it.
Yeah, but it was the same on.
I just freewheel
the
down.
It was the same on the bike though. If you didn't have the legs, you didn't have the legs, did you?
Yeah, but there's a certain amount of free speed, and like I said, you can just get over the climb, you just freewheel your way down. I don't know how many guys are the pro runners, but sometimes I find the downhill. Sometimes I find the downhill worse than the uphill.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about hardest ever races, because talking about doing things together, it makes me think of Andalusia stage race, which was... When would that have been, Hamish? Was that around 2012,
13?
Was it 5 or 7 days long? Something like that.
I think 5.
Yeah. And it was it's pairs. So you had to like stay within, I don't know, whatever of each other.
200 meters or something like that. Or
yeah, exactly.
On day one, you punctured about 3 times, I think. And then because we were only carrying, we had a tube each, I think. So then by the third puncture, we didn't have any tubes in order to like, actually change. And then the next, like, because in the bike racing, this is like because there are marathon stages, you'd have like feed zones, just the same as the mountain, like the long distance mountain running, you'd have the feed zones, tech zones. And in you can only like change stuff within those tech zones.
Yeah,
so I'm like, shit, Hamish's got his third flat. We can't do anything with it. And shit, we're going to have to ride to the next tech zone. So, I mean, Hamish rode a flat for, it felt ages, like 10K plus, like over the Spanish mountains. Yeah, and then...
Is it? I've completely forgotten that. Yeah.
Got the change. And then this is kind of going back to sometimes it's better being together and sometimes it's not, because after that you're absolutely done, like you're totally spent. And then we had the next 3 days you suffered like a dog, and I remember sometimes thinking, oh fuck, just like go on with it. Like, I remember being like really annoyed, like sometimes because you had to stay together. Hamish was absolutely done in. And then one of the second to last day got cancelled because of like snow, wasn't it? It was like it was snowing a lot, and they said, "Oh, we're not going to run the stage, so we're just going to null this one, and then we're going to run the last day." And it had like having that day off it, within the stage race had like opposite effects. My body shut down, so but my body thought it was the end, and Hamish was like, body need the recovery. So then he absolutely annihilated me on the last day. I was like hanging like a dog the whole time. But it's finding that balance between, you know, that's just kind of like side story on training with other people. It's got to have the right, they got to push you at the right time, but also not be pushing you like too much or, you know, holding you back, isn't it?
That's big brother just showing who's boss, mate. That's what that is.
Yeah, taking it home, bringing it home.
Taking it home and making it.
That was a pretty tough race, actually.
Sounds it, though.
I was going to ask you, Rob, on tough races, what's your hardest ever one you've done?
Definitely the same as what you boys are saying. When me and Casper did the Transalp a couple of years ago, that was absolutely brutal. You know, it sold as some massive enjoyment party thing. You know, you go race and you go back and chill and have wine and beers at night and all this stuff, but it's by like day three or four you're just a zombie and just have to wake up and you almost just want to get the job done. But I know we weren't in the best of shape going into that. Like, we crammed in a lot of weekends down at the lakes together and tried to just do big back-to-back days and built them up over deciding to enter the race like 10 weeks before or something. But most people, if you prepared well for it, you know, given 6 months to a year, you would smash it. But yeah, just waking up and running on, you're when your body's in agony, you just feel like shit, don't you?
But do you not think it's amazing that on those stage races, you finish a day and you're finished. And then the next day, you think at the end of it, you know, where can I go tomorrow? And then the next day you get up and you do it all again.
Yeah, but it's crazy because we were having, I remember one night, I actually got some funny videos of that. I fell off a swing and like almost broke my neck, and we were in stitches. it was hilarious, you know. But we had like pizzas and we were buying like steaks and cutting them up on top of our pizzas and chickens. And, you know, it was, you're just so, you just can eat for days, you know. Even after that race, I must have ate like 10,000 calories a day, you know. It was just mad. You know, what were you fueling on in that for your biking then? Is it similar to running, or is it just ravenous all the time?
Yeah, I think, well, I can't, I've never got my fueling for running right, as Seb can attest to when we did our 50k.
cramping halfway and absolutely gone.
Basically, full gas to the 30k mark. Crawling home for the rest of it. Just pacing anyway.
Yeah, but to be fair, Seb was in absolute explosive like leopard shape at that current time. he was training in the best shape of his life for that, for a few months before those days. You know, I experienced it. Like, when we went for a run, I was like, "Robbo, you all right?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm chugging away." And you were like, you were just on the zone. You were just in really good shape, Seb. What can we say?
But yeah, on the bike, we used to eat a lot of bars, gels for the stage races. I guess I want to say we ate little bits of cake and things, but probably not. That probably would have helped.
I don't think we did.
Used to do a lot through liquid. Yeah, maybe not.
What about at night time? You know, once you had like a main meal, were you cramming things in before sleep and stuff just to rebuild the glycogen and things, or, you know, or
I think everyone's different, aren't they? I don't think I could sleep very close to having eaten a lot. And I think, I mean, we basically just eat pasta, didn't we? That's what everyone does. I've heard, was it Jacob Atkin came on and said, "Oh yeah, I just fuel on pizza the night before." And I was like,
"Oh yeah, it makes you feel a bog in that."
Is heavy.
Yeah.
Imagine how quick you'd be without that. Yeah, I think.
I don't know. He's so bloody skinny. There's no way he eats all these pizzas. Like,
yeah, I definitely lied, yeah, didn't he?
He's actually in like bloody jelly tots or something, I think.
He was like, I'm coming on this pod and these guys are my competitors, so I'm just going to feed them a lot of crap. Yeah, we just eat pasta every night. I'm pretty sure that's when my like coffee thing started as well, from those stage races, because you literally just can't wake up in the morning. They used to start early as well. It's the same with the running. You know, you start like 7, 8 in the morning and then you've got to be up at like 5.
Yep.
So you smash a coffee every morning and then basically that was it for life. But yeah, it's pretty similar, to be fair. I think I probably used to drink more than I would running, even though that's not necessarily the best thing, but because you're not bouncing up and down on the bike, you can just hold a lot more liquid, can't you? In fact, even on that stage race, I punctured 3 times. Seb had to stop for a piss on that first day as well.
Do you not just like, what? You don't just...
Literally in front of the crowd. People like, somebody got out their video camera and was like, filming the riders coming through. I had to hop off and was taking a piss and they were like, oh,
It was really weird because it was so cold. It was absolutely freezing, wasn't it? It was really cold. And I'd hydrated like a normal... like summer race the day before, but it was in February, and I was just dying for a pee.
I'm pretty sure you flattered. I repaired your flat while you had.
Oh, that was it.
I mean, it's just a nightmare.
I tried to pee off the side of the bike at one stage.
You should have just done it. Just pissed yourself. That's dedication. That's dedication. You need that.
It just the first bit just immediately went onto the shoe, and I just thought no. No, that's enough of that. Like,
we didn't have a shoe sponsor at that time. Yeah. So.
that's the flip of, you know, I asked Rob about his hardest race. That's got to be the complete opposite end of the spectrum on heat-wise to your hardest race, which I'm guessing is...
Well, are you picking it for...
Well, I'm not going to, but I'm guessing what it is.
Yeah, it's definitely Langkawi. Definitely Langkawi. It was such a weird race. I mean, it was another stage race. There's a theme here, isn't there? Langkawi, yeah, it's a little island off Kuala Lumpur. Basically, some business out there. I don't know if it's connected to government or something. They just decided they wanted this big international mountain bike race. It was right at the back end of the year in September, maybe, like way off the back end.
I think it was October. And it's when I was done in with my neck.
Was it? Yeah. Well, God, it was. Yeah. I basically paid for everyone to go out. It wasn't a pairs race, it was single. That was five to seven stages. Anyway, basically I got like food poisoning or water poisoning or, you know, deli belly type thing. And I was fine through the prologue because that was only about 5 minutes. And then on the first proper stage, about 2 hours into 4 hours, and I was just like, nope, I'm empty now. And I was literally freewheeling to the finish line. I just like rolled in, fell off the bike, and I was like on the floor, like shivering, like, oh, and they're like, oh, he's got heat stroke, and like spraying me with the water, and I'm like, no, I'm absolutely freezing. Yeah. I'm absolutely freezing. And they like drag me off to the stretcher, get a drip on. There's like a photo of me just like blacked out on this stretcher in the middle of the jungle. And they're like, yeah, we should probably take him to hospital as well. So I went to this hospital in Langkawi, and I don't know what they'd been doing in the room before, but it was like covered in blood.
Oh my God.
And they were like, just get on the stretcher. And I'm like, okay. And then they stuck another drip in me. And basically they were like, you're so dehydrated that all the kind of like blood and fluids have just gone to your major organs to protect you.
That's
like,
quite bad. That's serious when that
it's
happens.
Not ideal.
That's bad.
But then you raced it out and actually did quite well.
Yeah. I was just like, I had a couple of drips and I was like, okay, feel a bit better now. Got up the next day. I had such bad acid reflux though. Like every time I ate anything, I was just like,
yeah.
So you can imagine how your kind of recovery is. And it was so bad that I couldn't even eat in the hotel. So went out into the market. I bought like a little gas stove so I could just cook plain pasta, like
some like
most basic thing ever. And I was something. Like smashing. Yeah, exactly. Just like smashing Rennies and just anything to keep it down. And I did. I did gradually recover over it, sort of. But I mean, it was really the humidity. I don't know if you've ever been to those sort of countries, but it's like being in an oven. Like, you're just sweating and it's not doing anything and you can't drink enough. And you're ill. And it was a long flight. It was like 15-hour flight. I didn't sleep. I remember talking to the stewards just the whole way. Got addicted to, you know, the online, like the bowling games on the flight. Just playing that whole, it was terrible preparation. But yeah, came back, got an eye infection, then dislocated my shoulder a second time. So it was a pretty like bad run of injuries.
That's not good, is it?
That's a lot. I know. My shoulder came out just as Seb was back on the bike after his neck injury. So we were like, oh my word. What? Hey,
but the thing is, Hamish dislocated his shoulder when we actually hadn't started training yet. We went down to the Pyrenees to a place called Les Ongles, which is actually really near Font-Remous, which you'll probably know, Rob, where we'll the runners go out to. And we were just having a few like relaxed days beforehand, and we were up the mountain, and you basically like fell down a hill. Well, you were kind of running down the hill, was wearing a bag, and just slammed, dislocated his shoulder.
It's like the sort of thing you see a little kid do, just fall down a bank, except when you're like 20, you dislocate your shoulder instead of bouncing up.
But that was the first dislocation. There's a whole load of crap to deal with there because the French were a nightmare.
He put it back in quite aggressively as well. It was like quite a loud. And then they gave me all the French meds, you know, they've not got the same restrictions on drugs, and that made me feel pretty funny.
You must have felt pretty good.
Yeah, well, the second time I had it out, I was in the UK, and they gave me in the hospital the gas, you know, where they give pregnant women when they're giving birth. Yeah. Properly makes you high just straight away. It's like, yep, that's the good stuff. Just get it in.
Given you've rehabbed so many injuries, like what's kind of your advice, would you say, or what do you think is the best thing to do when rehabbing an injury and coming back to like top shape?
Also as well, think about what is it that makes you want to come back every time after probably experiencing so many setbacks and things compared to a lot of average Joes out there?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, any of your listeners are runners, aren't they, or sports people? So if you do any kind of sport to the limit, injury is inevitable. Yeah. I mean, Seb and I have talked about this, you know, so annoying. You get injured and then you're out for ages. I mean, you know, at the moment, you're both struggling with injuries and trying to rehab it back. It's just kind of part of it. So I think the first thing is just embrace that. It just is what it is. And then I would say professional help. I've tried to do it both not seeking help early enough and then vice versa, going and getting scanned and all that kind of stuff. You just need to get it scanned, know what's wrong, and then find a decent physio or somebody to help you along the way. You know, you've had Gem on, someone like that that just really, really knows their stuff, and somebody that kind of gets the sport angle. Because I've had both physios as well, you know, a lot of physios on the high street, they'll just see people that are coming out of the NHS that have just, you know, got minor sprains and things like that. You know, I went to the NHS when I first did my knee, and don't get me wrong, they are fantastic, but they just don't really get the kind of sport side of it. They were like, you can run 20K, I don't really get what the problem is. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. But any moment my knee just gives away. I think it's just, If you push yourself to the limit, you're going to get injured. Yeah. But if you do that much sport, you've probably got the determination to get yourself back in shape and rehab it. Mm-hmm. And it's just about routine, isn't it? I mean, I just get so bored, but it's just life. Like I said, I think it's just life now. If you've lived it to, you know, really push yourself and all that good stuff, you're kind of going to go over the edge and keep yourself going. I mean, you just have to look at literally any sport. I mean, Seb and I talk about this quite a bit. And I'm like, oh, my knee, my shoulder. And then you watch like YouTube videos, all the skiers, their knees are absolutely done, like any runner. It's just, you can't see it from the outside, can you? And it's the same with rugby players. You know, you watch a game of rugby and you're like, they're in amazing shape. And then you talk to somebody and they're like, yeah, my shoulder's hanging off, or my knee's absolutely destroyed. I'm just like pumped up on painkillers, or I've just punched myself in the face to get the adrenaline going before I played. You can't tell from the outside, pretty much, like anybody is ruined if they're doing sport to any kind of top level. I mean, it sounds great, doesn't it? It's like, yeah, you're like pro athlete, and you just don't know what the other side of it is. It's like,
yeah,
you just destroyed yourself, basically. It's all good fun.
Yes. Good.
It's worth the trade-off, isn't it?
Definitely.
Well, you tell me.
It is definitely worth it, man. Definitely.
Thanks for joining, Hamish.
Great. Thanks,
yeah,
guys.
I'll speak to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Cheers, pal.
Bye. Bye.
That was wicked getting the stories. The thing is, we could have covered so many topics there. There's such a variety of things, from fueling to best and worst moments to... be great to get Hamish on to actually talk about his running, and that's his sort of his go-to passion now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Hamish actually is that because, you know, we both focus so 100% on the bike for so many years, and then obviously I've, you know, picked up back with my running, which I did before, and I was actually going to ask him just before he signed off, but if we'll ever see him compete again, but I don't think he will, because I think some people need the competitive outlet, like you, I do. Whereas Hamish has got to the place now, I think, where he's sort of satisfied with what we did or what he did, and that he's quite happy just staying in really good shape for the fun of it, and just for the love of being fit and for the love of running or going on the bike or what have you. That's all for this one. Remember, you can keep up with the pod on Instagram and Facebook at The Mountain Running Pod. And if you like what you hear, please rate us and give the pod a review on iTunes, as well as subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. So next episode, we will finally be joined by Big Simo, aka Robbie Simpson. He's ramping up for the Olympic trials at the moment. So we'll catch you then.
Thanks, everybody. Bye. We'll be right back.